This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
This is the Championship Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, between 2 and 3 o'clock this afternoon. Plenty to talk about over the next hour down in the Championship. We'll be talking about Leeds United. Could they be having some improved investment over the next few months from the Middle East? Andrea Radrizzani has said they can compete with Manchester City if they do so. We'll also talk about Sheffield Wednesday, an impressive start for new manager Gary Monk. We'll also be talking a little bit about Hull and Derby as they look to get past some off-field issues and concentrate on matters on the field. We'll also be doing a bit of a manager watch. Reading have appointed a new manager, but where will Barnsley and Millwall look for their new managers? We'll also have a little bit of an international roundup from last night as Cristiano Ronaldo scores his 700th career goal. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 70 20 558. This is the Championship Fan Show here on Love Sport. So plenty to talk about in the next hour. As I mentioned, if you want to share your views with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We had quite a lot of reaction to Reading's appointment of Mark Bowen yesterday. Not many fans particularly happy with that decision, but they are one of the teams that have appointed a new manager. Still a few clubs out there that are still looking for a new manager. As I mentioned, our focus, our spotlight this afternoon will be on Leeds, Sheffield Wednesday, Hull and Derby this afternoon. We're going to look at a bit of manager watch before we talk a little bit about Leeds. Reading, as I mentioned, have appointed sporting director Mark Bowen as their head coach. They sacked José Gómez last week, and they've now appointed the man that was the sporting director, and not a lot of happiness from Reading. Reading fans, they are not very happy with that appointment. Barnsley, another team on the lookout for a new manager. They sacked Daniel Stendel, who had led them into the Championship from League One. Interestingly, Jan Sievert is the current bookies favourite for the Barnsley job, despite being sacked by Huddersfield a couple of months ago. Steve Cherundolo is the second favourite. He's most recently been an assistant coach for the USA men's team. And Millwall also on the lookout for a new manager. Neil Harris resigned before the Leeds game, just before the international break. The Millwall won 2-1, actually, despite not having a full-time manager in place. Gary Rowett is currently the favourite with the bookies for that job. Gareth Ainsworth, they've approached Wickham to talk to him, so he's in the frame, as is Tim Cahill, obviously used to play for Millwall. So still a couple of clubs out there on the lookout for a new manager. I'm sure the next club they're going to talk about aren't looking for a new manager. They're very happy with the manager they currently have. That's Marcelo Bielsa and Leeds. And I'm delighted to say we're joined by Kevin Markey, editor of Leeds United Mad website. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Kevin. If we look at things generally then for Leeds, fifth place in the playoff positions on 20 points at the 11-game stage at the second international break, just 2 points off the top. How would you assess these first couple of months of the season?
Hi, Kieran. Yeah, you're right. We're very happy with Bielsa at the moment. And yeah, what can you say, really? It's been a fairly steady start. It could have been better if our home form would have been clicking a little bit more, but it's early days yet. There's a lot of competitive teams around us at the moment who probably fancy their chances this season. West Brom are looking good, a team that we beat the other week. But a lot of teams seem, you know, when you look at the Swansea and Stoke the other week, top against bottom, everybody fancied a home banker there, but Stoke pulled off a victory. So a lot of teams are beating each other. So it's going to be probably the most competitive championship season in a long while, I should imagine.
In the game before the international break that Leeds lost 2-1 against managerless Millwall, obviously Gaetano Berardi was sent off. Now, he's won his appeal against that red card. Does that really offer even a small bit of consolation to you, even though he will now be available for the weekend's game against Birmingham? The fact that that then hampered Leeds for most of that game, playing most of the game down to 10 men, surely that's not really a consolation for you as Leeds fans?
No, not at all. It was early in the game, about, 20 minutes or so. And it really affected us, I think, at that point, because obviously he gave a penalty as well as sending Berardi off. We go a goal down, and it's sort of, backs against the wall for a lot of the game, and a sucker punch just before half-time, conceding a second, but it was all us in the second half, but we couldn't manage to pull it back, unfortunately. But yeah, it's a very small consolation. I think it's the first time in about 12 years we've had a red card rescinded by the league. So we can celebrate that at least, but small consolation when you look at the big picture.
Really interesting comments coming from owner Andrea Radrizzani. He says that Leeds could compete with Manchester City if proposed investment from the Middle East goes through. Apparently, Qatar Sports Investments, which owns PSG, is one of three parties interested in the club. The company is run by Nasir Al-Khelaifi, who is a friend of Radrizzani. What's your view on that? There are a number of investment groups interested in Leeds. Would you be kind of promoting the company that is backed or is run by PSG or owns PSG? Would you be backing them as a potential owner or investments in Leeds?
Yeah, I mean, it does sound a fantastic sort of proposal, really, when you look at it. But I think this has been ongoing now for a long while. And with the sort of international break, these stories sort of pop up now and again. I don't think we're the only club in the league was probably looking at, future investment. It's just that obviously when somebody like the PSG owners get linked, you do get a little bit excited. I mean, you got to look at the big picture, though. We're currently fifth in the Championship. We haven't been in the Premier League for 16 seasons now. That's including three seasons in League One. And Radrizzani reckons we could compete with Man City if we get the right investment. So he's saying the right things. How concrete it is, I don't really know. He says there's other people that have approached him as well whilst he's been there. There's been more than 20 parties involved, I believe, including the Qatar Sports Investment. There's a guy in the USA that's supposed to be interested, a lifelong Leeds United fan, and an Italian owner as well. So he says he's looking at those three particular proposals out of the 20 or so that he's got. And he's doing the right thing. At the end of the day, he's the custodian of the club. He's going to pass it on one day to somebody. He's got to think about the fans. He wants to make Leeds a big club again. That means getting into the Premier League. So he's making all the right noises. But like I say, it's been a quiet sort of few days without any football. So these stories do sort of come out at this time of the season. No doubt it'll come out again next November when there's another international break. But yeah, I mean, it does sound very exciting that we could be owned by the owners of Man City. So, dream on, as I say. It's a bit of a pipe dream at the moment, but it's good to know that those sort of people are getting linked with the club.
Leeds Chief Executive Angus Kinnear said in an interview in August that the club are one of the most investable propositions in world football. Would you say, obviously, you are a Leeds fan, so that perhaps a little bit biased, but do you think the fact that the owners, Qatar Sports Investments of PSG, just highlights this kind of this narrative that Leeds are still a massive club, despite the fact that they've been in the Championship and out of the Premier League for quite a while?
I think so, because you already have to look at the fan base, not just locally, but obviously worldwide. There's so many different fan clubs all over the world. And like I say, we've been out of the Premier League for a long time, but we still generate this interest in the club, and it's great to be a part of it. We're going to be 100 years old this week. There's a lot of celebrations going on, and I don't think a lot of other clubs would have the same effect on people as Leeds United do. But like I say, I am very slightly biased, but then again, a lot of people come up to me that are non-Leeds United fans and say, look, you're a fantastic club. Why you've been, you know, out of the Premier League for so long? It's obviously a question I can't really answer. It's bad ownership, I suppose, for most point of the time. But it's nice to know that Radziani's getting things back on track and he's talking to the right people.
Two men on the field that have been contributing quite a few goals, the two kind of centre-forwards, Patrick Bamford scored for, as has Eddie Nketiah, who's on loan from Arsenal. I'd seen a couple of weeks ago that there had been a criticism from a small set of Leeds fans of Patrick Bamford getting on his back a little bit. What's your view on those two at the moment? Do you think that they can both play in the same side, and do you think that they are both performing at a level that Leeds fans expect of them?
Well, look, it's early days yet. It's 11 games into a season. I'm sure Eddie Nketiah is going to get his chance eventually. Whether they can play in the same team, obviously, Ole Bielsa can answer that, really. He tried it in the second half against Charlton. It didn't really work that well. Tried it in the second half against Brentford. Nketiah scored a goal. It's just that every time there's an international break, Nketiah seems to do well for the England team when he's involved in the under-21. So obviously the fans are seeing him score, even though it was a penalty the other night. It's still a goal and they're itching for him to get a start at Leeds. And obviously he looks a natural goal scorer, but for me, Bamford works hard for the team. He does chip in with the odd goal. Obviously he could score more, but he seems to tie down all defences when he plays. And when Nketiah comes on, he's playing against a tired defence that obviously Bamford's created with his strong play, and the chances are he does get a chance or two. But I'd love to see them both play in the same team, and obviously that's something that could happen over the next few games maybe.
And just finally then, Kevin, up next for Leeds is a home game on Saturday against Birmingham, who are currently sat 12th in the table. There have been a few issues at home for Leeds of getting all 3 points, but are you sure that on Saturday, Elland Road, after the international break, that Leeds can get the win and that could see them potentially rise as high as the top of the table?
I hope so, because obviously we're up against Pep Clotet as well, who's one of our former coaches. Under Gary Monk, he's very well respected at Leeds. It's going to be our 100th anniversary on this week, so it'll be our 100th anniversary game. So hopefully there'll be a party atmosphere, and hopefully that'll be accentuated at 5 o'clock when we hopefully get 3 points, and it'll be a party weekend. But Birmingham are a tough team; they're very well run at the moment by the new coach, hard to beat down. They had some great away wins this season at Millwall and at Brentford, so they will be up for the game. But hopefully it'll be party time at Leeds, and hopefully good celebrations to bring in the 101st year at Leeds United.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Kevin. That was Kevin Markey, editor of Leeds United Mad website. Talking about Leeds, I think I've said it in the past, I think it's a make or break season for Bielsa and Leeds. After what happened last season, where they should have got promoted and failed, it does feel like there's even more pressure on them this year to get promoted. They've made a solid start to the season, currently 5th place on 20 points. They're just a couple of points off the top, where West Brom and Nottingham Forest sit on 22 points. So it feels like a crucial season for Leeds, but they're in a solid position at the moment. Key thing about the Championship, not peaking too soon. And that's what Leeds did last season and then fell out of form just at the wrong time. If you want to get in contact with us, Leeds fans out there, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. Up next, we'll be talking all things Sheffield Wednesday.
Love Sport.
We're going to be turning our attention back to the Championship and talking all things Sheffield Wednesday now. And I'm delighted to say we are joined by Alex Miller, Sheffield Wednesday writer at the Sheffield Star. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Alex. Wednesday are 8th on 19 points after 11 games. Considering they started the season with an interim manager and Gary Monk was then brought in, for Wednesday to be doing this well, surely that's even a surprise to Sheffield Wednesday fans.
Yeah, hi there, Kieran. Yeah, to a point, the fact is that the interim manager that you mentioned there, Lee Bullen, you know, very much part of the furniture at Sheffield Wednesday. I know that's sort of part of the course for interim managers at all sorts of clubs that they come from within. But he had the benefit of doing it two times before. And it was the longest that he did it. he did it for 2 months. But, you know, there was always a feeling that it was a safe pair of hands, that he was continuing the work and the momentum that Steve Bruce had built there. And whilst that Bruce departure was very sudden and unexpected, and it was felt as if it was a blow at the time, Lee Bullen was an experienced and safe pair of hands, as I say, and did some great work leading into, obviously, the appointment of Gary Monk last month.
Gary Monk has certainly made a big impact since he joined in the 5 league games, 3 wins out of those 5 since he took over a month ago. What do you think the biggest change is that we've seen under Gary Monk from before? Is it a case of reinstalling some confidence back into the team, or has there been quite a lot of structural tactical changes that means that this is translated into better results on the pitch?
The changes from a football point of view, I think, have been almost quite subtle. They are going slightly more direct. They're making the most out of Stephen Fletcher up front and big Atty Newhew, who I'm sure a few of your listeners will be aware of, the big Kosovan up front. He's been sort of brought back into the first team fold. They have gone slightly more direct. But what has been interesting in just a few games, as you say, that Monk's been in charge, is flexibility tactically. You know, he's gone from a 4-4-2. We've played a 4-3-3 at times and subtle variations on both of them, mixing around the position that Barry Bannon plays in midfield, whether he's further forward, because obviously he's a player that a lot of championship teams, you know, will put a man on and try to nullify. And, you know, he's clearly a very important player for Sheffield Wednesday. So in terms of big sweeping changes to personnel, you know, they have been quite sort of nuanced, and it's certainly working so far. There've been a couple of disappointing results in there. The 1-0 defeat at Hull City sort of springs to mind, but the building blocks are there for a bit of success, hopefully, over the next few months at Sheffield Wednesday.
When Gary Monk was appointed, Alex, both you and in terms of the Sheffield Wednesday fans as well, was there a sense of excitement when he was appointed that this was exactly the right man for the job, a championship club on the lookout for a man with quite a bit of experience at this level? Or was there a little bit of trepidation, a bit of nervousness when he was appointed, thinking maybe there was someone else out there, someone like Chris Hughton, who has a vast amount of experience in the Championship and the Premier League, that may have been a better option?
Yeah, it was, you know, a decidedly mixed response, really. And you sort of always get that from Sheffield Wednesday. You know, a lot of big clubs, there is sort of quite polarised opinion. And that's certainly the case at Hillsborough. But yeah, I mean, Chris Hughton was the first name on everyone's lips when Steve Bruce left. And, you know, it's no secret that the club did approach him and Hughton decided that he wanted to wait for a Premier League job. And that wait, you know, goes on, obviously, for him. As I said before, Lee Bullen was in charge for 2 months and we had to wait for the last international break for Gary Monk to be unveiled. So, you know, reading between the lines there, it's clear that Monk wasn't the club's first choice, and it took a process. There was also an approach, we believe, of sorts to the Cowley brothers, who obviously ended up at Huddersfield Town. So it was clear that it wasn't just a straight in, he's our man, and the fans' response was sort of mirrored that. You know, he's seen as a safe pair of hands. He's obviously had a number of good jobs across the Championship, but I think what worried fans was the fact that he's not really stuck around too long in any of his jobs, from Swansea, you know, obviously all the way through to Birmingham. And it's interesting, sort of drilling down, as you can imagine that me and my colleagues did when he was appointed, looking at the jobs that he did and speaking to some of the journalists at the respective papers across the country where he's managed. It's clear that he has more or less done a good job, even at Middlesbrough, which is seen as the blot on his copybook. It seemed that, you know, maybe they were a little bit too quick to pull the trigger and fire him. Obviously there was stuff going on off the field as well. But yeah, I think what Gary Monk needs to do is lay roots, and he's got a big club with a lot of potential in Sheffield Wednesday. I think there's every chance that he might be able to do that.
The top goal scorer at the moment for Sheffield Wednesday is Stephen Fletcher on 5 goals. Do you think we're seeing a little bit of renaissance of Fletcher's career, or is it a case of, without wanting to sound rude, he's kind of found his level, that this is where he's at the moment, he can thrive in the Championship, can't necessarily make the step up into the Premier League?
Yeah, well, I mean, he's performed well at Premier League clubs in the past. He's 32 now, of course, and he has had his injury problems. But yeah, renaissance may well be the right word for Stephen Fletcher. This is the best form that we've seen of him in a Sheffield Wednesday shirt. I mentioned that, you know, the team, quite a good percentage of the time, is sort of set up to play to his strength. You know, everyone knows what a big, strong target man he is and how good he is in the air. And with people like Barry Bannon and Adam Reach putting balls in for him, you know, I think Sheffield Wednesday are right to finally be playing to his strength. Yeah, he's got 5 goals. He scored a number of different goals in there. There's a penalty in there as well. So, yeah, as I said, it's all sort of geared around him at the minute. He's thriving off that. He's looking fit. Liam Palmer said in the week while he was out on international duty with Scotland that, you know, he's in the gym more than he ever has been, Stephen Fletcher, and he's taking that really seriously. So, yeah, if he can stay fit and if he can keep banging in the goals, he will be absolutely key to Sheffield Wednesday's push at the playoffs.
Looking then ahead to the next game, it's away at Cardiff on Friday night. I know from a couple of weeks ago that Neil Warnock was very open in his views, not very happy that for the second time this season, Cardiff are having to play straight off the back of an international break. What will Sheffield Wednesday Gary Monk's views be on that, that off the back of an international break, it's quite a short turnaround. Not only are they playing on the Friday night, but they're also playing away from home at Cardiff.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we'll be speaking to Gary Monk tomorrow, so we'll certainly be putting that question to him. I'm not entirely sure how many players are affected by the international breakdown at Cardiff. I imagine it's more than Sheffield Wednesday. Massimo Luongo pulled out of the Australia squad, so he hasn't had that long flight down there. But really, it's only 2 players at Wednesday. Liam Palmer, who I mentioned before, who's been playing at Scotland, and Atiniuki, who I also mentioned before, he's been playing for Kosovo and had a couple of games. So it's been a really good opportunity for Monk, who, you know, was thrown in at a time between 2 international breaks, where the nature of the championship was they were playing Saturday, Tuesday. And, you know, I think they were really looking forward to this international break as an opportunity to get the vast majority of the squad in down at the training ground, and the first opportunity for Monk to really, you know, impress his ideals on the team.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Alex. That was Alex Miller, a Sheffield Wednesday writer at the Sheffield Star. It's been a good start for Gary Monk at Wednesday. 3 wins in his 5 league games in charge since he took over a month ago. And things are looking pretty decent for Wednesday. Maybe putting on a similar sort of push that they did a few years ago under Carlos Carvalhal, where they got so close to promotion a few years ago. So things going pretty well for Sheffield Wednesday at the moment, just outside the playoff spot.
This is Love Sport.
And we're going to be talking all things Hull now. I'm delighted to say we're joined by Jonty Coleman, a digital football writer for Hull Live and the Hull Daily Mail. Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jonty. 16th place for Hull. They're on 13 points after 11 games. Is this about where Hull fans expected them to be at this stage of the season, or does the table maybe lie? I've spoken to quite a few fans from a number of championship clubs over the last week or so that saying the table does lie a little bit. They should be higher than they are, but does their position at the moment for Hull represent how their season has gone?
I think in summary, probably yes, but in general, performances have been a lot better than 16th for 80, 85 minutes of the game, but it's the split-second decisions and mistakes, or, you know, not being able to put away chances that have ultimately cost them. I think there's not been many games, probably only 1 or 2 really, that you'd say that Hull deserve not to win this season so far. They've actually played really well for the vast majority of games, created lots of chances, played some really good football, but it's the odd mistake, or it's the inability to put away clinical chances that has ultimately cost them, and it's exactly why they're 16th right now.
One man that obviously is impressed, not just this season, but last season as well, Jarrod Bowen, 5 goals, 2 assists. I know he was linked with a whole host of Premier League clubs. I think he was linked with Arsenal about 12 months ago. He was linked with the likes of Newcastle over the summer. How do you think Hull have managed to keep hold of Jarrod Bowen, considering he is doing it on a consistent basis? And factor into it, Hull aren't, without one to sound disrespectful, they're not Leeds, they're not West Brom, they're not right near the top of the table. So how have they managed to secure him, considering he is impressing in a relatively struggling side?
In short, they never really actually got a bid for him. There was all this, you know, suggested interest. There was Newcastle, Arsenal, Tottenham, Leicester, among the clubs that were linked. But there was never an official bid for him, and, you know, you can't. that's kind of been a fortunate circumstance, the whole, really. It's very surprising, I think it was the out of the top 11 or top 12 goal scorers in the Championship last season, Jarrod Bowen's the only one not playing in the Premier League right now. So that's a sign of, you know, how lucky they really have been. I think, like, you look at the top goal scorers from last season, and they've either all got big Premier League moves, mainly thinking of, you know, the likes of Owen McBurney, for example. Tammy Abraham's obviously gone back and is doing the business for Chelsea. And it's a case of a lot of players that were near Bowen in the goal scoring ranks last season. So Neil Morpy to Brighton, another one. So I think that, I don't know, it's a weird one, really. I think a lot of the clubs that were linked, they already had options in that sort of position. I mean, you look at Newcastle, we obviously spent big on Alan Saint-Maximin. Tottenham have got a whole host of wingers, but so they don't really need another one. Leicester, the same, have got like the likes of Harvey Barnes, Rafi Jozal. Madison can play out wide as well, among plenty of other options. It was a case of there wasn't really a necessity for the clubs that were linked with him. And right now, it's quite handy for Hull to have him around.
Another man that is contributing a number of goals and assists is that of Kamil Grosicki. He's got 4 goals and an assist. So do you think, one of the questions I've asked you in the past is whether there is an over-reliance on Jarrod Bowen. Do you think that the emergence of someone like Grosicki this season shows that there are other players that Hull have? There isn't just necessarily just a sole pressure on Bowen to perform.
I think it's a joint pressure. Last season, all the goals sort of came from a front three of Bowen, Grosicki and Campbell. And the worry was how many of those were going to be around. Campbell's contract was up last season. Obviously, that didn't get renewed. So that's a strike of gone. Bowen and Grosicki, everyone expected them to leave and neither of them did. Which, again, is a massive benefit for Grant McCann's side. However, it is still a case of when those two aren't at it, they struggle. It was proved at Huddersfield. They need one of those two primarily for a moment of magic. I think it's a very high percentage of Hull's Championship goals this season have either been scored or created by one of Bowen and Grosicki. I think it took them 9 goals this season to actually register a first where neither of them were directly involved. And again, it was in the last 2 matches a prime example of that. The first face Sheffield Wednesday, a very cagey affair, you know, for the best part of an hour. They got the breakthrough and when they looked for that breakthrough away at Huddersfield a few days later, they couldn't get it and they conceded and they ended up losing 3-0. But they, in terms of performances, they're very similar games. So, you know, when you get one of them or both of them at their best, they're absolutely frightening to play against. It doesn't matter which Championship team Hull City come up against. Going forward, they can feel fearless when those two are at their best. But they just haven't, you know, there's too much reliance on them, is what I'm trying to say in short. Tom Ease and Josh McGuinness both arrived in the summer. They haven't been able to fill Campbell's void just yet, although Ease got his first goal recently, so maybe that might spark a bit of a rejuvenance in him. But again, you know, when Bowen and Grosicki aren't at it, Hull City aren't at it.
Looking back at Hull's last result before we look ahead to the weekend's game against QPR, 3-0 defeat away at Huddersfield. Obviously, under a new manager in Danny Cowley at the Terriers, was that a big shock for Hull fans that against a side that are still fairly near the bottom of the table, that not just the result in terms of losing, but the manner in which losing 3-0?
Yeah, it shocked a lot of people. It shocked me, definitely. Again, like I mentioned, there's a few games recently where it's been very level for an hour and whoever gets that first goal completely changes as far as Hull's concerned. It happened at Luton where they won 3-0 at Luton a couple of weeks earlier, but again, it was a very tight game for an hour or so. So, and that scoreline probably flattered Hull City, whereas this one probably flattered Huddersfield because of just how even the game was. I mean, neither took a real strong hold of it and Hull City defended well, but once Giannini Bakuna was introduced midway through the second half for Huddersfield, changed the game completely, got an assist within a minute for Carlin Grant, then scored himself, and then was involved in the build-up for Elias Kachinka to make it 3-0. So, again, it was a massive shock to the system, especially off the back of such an important home win against a very high-flying Sheffield Wednesday at the minute. But yeah, it's just a case of taking chances and making that first goal count, which has been proven in the last few weeks.
And just finally then, Jonty, looking ahead to the home game on the weekend against QPR, are these the types of games that QPR have actually made a surprisingly good start to the season under Mark Warburton? Do you think this is, though, at home, a game that Hull simply have to be looking at without wanting to put too much pressure on themselves and thinking this is just a three points you have to get at home?
I think this is going to be the start of probably the toughest section of Hull City's season. In the next five, we play four of their five opponents are currently in the top nine of the table. That's including a trip down to Fulham, trip to Nottingham Forest, home match against QPR, who's obviously doing very well, and West Brom as well, who's been excellent this season. And the other game is a home against Derby, who were playoff finalists last season. Those five games between now and the next international break are going to be incredibly, you know, they could be season deciding. I don't think that, you know, if they struggled to get results in all five games, that would be a bit of an issue. But I think if this is a little blip in form, I don't think it would be too much of an area of concern, purely because of how difficult on paper the opponents are going to be. But considering it's at home, of these next five games, QPR at home is probably one of the most generous they've got, which says a lot about the tough run they're in. So therefore, they need to try and take points where they can, and QPR right now is one of the better opportunities, but they shouldn't feel too disheartened if that isn't as easy as it seems.
Thank you very much for your time this afternoon, Jonty. That was Jonty Coleman, a digital football writer for Hull Live and the Hull Daily Mail, giving his views on Hull's next game against QPR. They're currently in one of those spots where probably looking over their shoulder a little bit at the moment, but they'll be looking back to get back to winning ways on the weekend at home against QPR. Love Sport.